Welcome to the Business of Life. I am so excited today because I'm actually in studio with Jan. We are in the same city at the same place
at
the
same
time.
We're like 3 feet apart.
We're looking at each other, and I'm going, oh, that's what she looks like. And you look better every time I see you. You're disappearing. You're getting thinner, and not that that matters. You're getting stronger. Let me rephrase that. You look fantastic. You look happy. And she's got this cap on that says, not your little girl, which is one of her songs on her album. But what I love about it, Jan, is you just told me that, because I said to you, what does that mean? And you said, it means like either you're standing beside me, cheering me on, or get the hell out of my way.
Exactly.
So I love it. Anyway, it's great to see you in person.
And likewise. It's our lives do kind of have this parallel feeling because Arlene and I both have places in Toronto and in Calgary. So we're just going back and forth. Like, we are passing each other in the air so much.
Literally.
So the nice thing is for me is I know that you can relate to my woes. Like, sometimes if I talk, you know, to good friends, but they don't travel like this, they don't adhere to this kind of a schedule, they're not in show business, and I'm doing air quotations right now. I'm very grateful that I have you to confide in, because I never want to sound whiny or complaining about traveling, because I know I have girlfriends and, you know, boyfriends that are looking at me going, what a dream life.
Yeah.
I'd love to be traveling all the time like that.
Yeah.
But on the other side of that coin, it's lonesome. It's really grueling. Anyone that's gone through an airport lately knows that the rules of the road change every time you go through, how they search you, how they pat you down, what you can take, not take. So it's nice for me to be able to go.
Is it weird that I'm looking forward to the pat downs now? Is that a sign of my loneliness?
It is.
That's kind of weird, isn't it? Please pat me down.
Can you? I think I have a knife near my bum.
No, that is not. That's my boob that you just touched. But go ahead, touch it again.
No, there could be a sharp object underneath there, and it's my nipple. Hi there.
Okay, Warren is just rolling his eyes. We already embarrassed him. We're only 2 minutes in. We've embarrassed Warren.
Yeah.
You know what? I feel like, listen, I've had an interesting week, and you're right. We do. I always. You say something that makes me stop and think, because I always do when I see your Instagram or we chat on text. I know exactly how you're feeling. I always think, you know what, she's pushing herself through to the next gig, to the next event, gathering steam, gathering strength, because you have to give so much when we're in public. Like, I find that I'm doing a speech tomorrow, and I find that I don't get anxious, I don't get nervous, although I probably am a little more thoughtful about it when I'm in my own home city. It's funny, you know, you spend so much time on the road speaking. I don't know if that's just true for you, Jan, but I find when I'm speaking,
it's hard
for me
to perform
anywhere
here
in the world, but when you perform in your own backyard, it's a very different feeling.
I don't like it.
No, it's isn't that funny?
Yeah, I think it's because you get extra scared, and you know, because it's people that you knew and
you feel more judged by. I think you feel a little more judged by them.
Yeah,
a
and
more.
Just recognizing when I look out into a crowd, especially if you know doing music. I did a couple of Christmas concerts here last year. And I swear to God, Arlene, I look out, and in the first 15 rows, I recognize, but not people I know well, but I'm like, I know that guy. I know her. I know, I used to go to college with them. So it's just a lot of, we know, they say the average person knows 50,000 people that you actually can identify.
Really?
Yeah, it's a big swath.
I only know five of their names. I'm just on my phone.
I know what you mean. It's not that you know them too, but you know of them, like those connectors.
Yes.
What do they call that? 7 degrees of
2 degrees of separation. I think in Canada it's 1 degree of separation. But I do.
It's 50,000 people. Yeah. I read that somewhere.
Well, I believe it, and I really kind of what I was trying to get at was I feel like. I do know that we go through these moments where there's days that you just say to yourself, I'm going to do this. And then you have to show up. You have to really show up, whether somebody's stopping you at a store, whether somebody's stopping you on the street, whether you're giving a speech, whether you're giving a concert, whether you're, you know, whatever you're doing, you've got to show up. And it's really funny. I'm been thinking a lot about this one in particular because it's with it's Mike Morrison, who is.
So I like
this,
Mike.
This will air after this. Our show will air after I have given the speech, so you'll be able to read the reviews, hopefully decent ones, online. But at the time, you know, when he asked me to do this, I thought, oh, that's going to be interesting.
And what's the talk about?
I'm going to talk about how social media has impacted me personally and, you know, how I feel it's impacting the world. And we've had a lot of conversations about this.
Because it's a big, big topic.
It's a big topic. And so I'm going to talk about that. And I'm excited about it because I love what we were just talking about. You again, Mike, saying how much we respect your and admire your courage. You know, you don't always have to agree with somebody's opinion,
no.
but you have to admire the courage they have to express their opinion in a way that hopefully resonates with people. And,
gets
on
social
thinking.
Media, when you yeah. own your words, and by
yes.
that I mean Mike Morrison tweets and does his Facebook
yes.
and his Instagram under Mike Morrison.
He's unapologetic.
About,
and I think you want to.
But he's not banana 1-2-3-5. Do you
yeah.
know what I mean? And I know that people do need to protect themselves in their workplace. I got into some hot water about, you know, I wish mm-hmm. people would just blah, blah, blah. Anyways, I'm not going to go there again. But, you know, Mike is opinionated. He's a champion of the LGBTQ community. And he makes no apologies.
And a cycling,
politically.
He's an environmentalist. Yeah, he makes no apologies. So,
but I love it.
Let's talk about apology. Let's
yes.
talk about apology.
That's what I wanted to talk about. The yeah. art of apology and, you know, how... You know, how we're utilizing apology or what it means to us in the workplace, in our personal friendships, in our intimate relationships with our kids, mothers, whatever. Like, what does it mean to apologize? As I've gotten older, I don't know, you know, I can't speak for you certainly, but we both do. It's been a real important tool for me, a learning tool, apology.
How so?
Earnest apology.
Explain.
Because it makes me acutely aware of my behavior when I have hurt somebody, when I've not been authentic to my word, when I haven't done what I said that I was going to do and I've let somebody down, you know, being in a personal argument, arguing over silly things, you know, well, you said that I blah, 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 insignificant things. But that apology can sometimes be used to diffuse a situation. It's not done earnestly. It's done, well, I'm sorry. I said I was sorry. Well, that's supposed to end a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
That's not an apology. Mm-hmm. That's a default setting of trying to end a conversation. And I think I was never very confrontational, and I often would end always apologizing, even for things that I shouldn't have been apologizing for in relationships, certainly. Where I just wanted to stop the fighting. And so I'd be like, I'm not sorry for this. This is not my doing. Like, I didn't start this. But then I learned from, well, I'm in this argument, so I do have something to do with it. So I'm just learning. I'm learning that apology is big. It's not something small. It's not something you push across the table when you want an out. It really is a tool for mending relationships and learning and going forward in your work.
Yeah, and an apology isn't, I'm sorry, but you made me think this way, or I'm sorry, but, you know, when you said that, it did this to me, or I'm sorry, but because of the things you said, I did these things. Like, in other words, it's not about putting it back on the other person that to blame your behavior on them, which is what most apologies are, which is you try and justify the reason you reacted the way you did because it was their fault for saying it the way they said it, or they acted in a way that created your reaction.
Oh.
And I think that we do that a lot. It's funny you wanted to talk about apology today because I literally just came from a meeting with my senior team at Venture, and we were sitting around the table and somebody was asking me a question, and it's a question I've been asked over the last 35 years. It had something to do, I can't remember now it was just around policies, some
okay.
of the policies of the company, and we were talking about some of the policy, and they said, well, I think we should do this, and I right away said no. I said, no, we're not doing that. And it was such an immediate reaction, Jen. And then we just kind of kept talking, and I could see the individual was not comfortable with, you know, how I'd addressed it. And so
how quickly you'd said no?
So quickly I'd said no. I just shut it down. And so at the end of the meeting, I said, listen, I really need to apologize to you because it's not okay for me to not have heard you properly and for me to just said no right away. And I feel badly that I did it. And that's not how we should be behaving. You should feel heard. And I apologized.
And what was the reaction?
I think everybody was a little bit, I think people knew that
but
I
they
had.
They learned from your leadership.
I hope so. At, I mean, but I also mean, made the mistake, Jan. I made the mistake
and
in the
so
first
you,
place.
But you owned right? up to it. Yeah. We've all been very yeah. quick to judge, but I'll tell you what. 9.5 out of 10 people would yeah. walk back to their office and let the other person sit in that moment. That's not
yeah,
right.
Maybe. No.
It's not right. To own your actions. My mom's Alzheimer's taught me that a lot, too. And my apologies with her were getting more and more hilarious as her disease went, because I talked about this before. I would get infuriated with my mom. I would raise my voice. I was hollering at her. I remember grabbing her arms in the driveway and going, "Why are you doing this? You can't come out here in bare feet and it's 10 below," and like yelling. And then 30 seconds later, even though I knew she was not going to be able to retain this, I'd say, "Mom, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to." "Well, what are you sorry for?"
Yeah.
"Well," but I still thought, even owning it made me laugh and made me smile, and I think on some level it resonated with her.
Yeah, you have to. We all have to own the things, how our behavior not just impacts others, but how it also impacts ourselves. Because, when we put out there, we get back. And so I think it's. I want to talk to you a little bit about parents and apologizing too, because I feel like that's a topic that we have talked a little bit about, but not a lot about, in terms of how important it is to, as kids, we think our parents should apologize to us for all the things they did to us as kids. But the reality is as adults, we should be apologizing for blaming them for everything. Like we put so much blame on our parents, and we feel that they owe us the apology, but maybe as children we owe them the apology for judging them, because we all make mistakes. We all get in places where, we can't necessarily know what we would have done in their shoes. La, 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 la.
You are listening to The Business of Life. I'm Jan Arden, and I'm sitting in person with Arlene Dickinson today, which is a rarity for us. We're usually strewn across the world somewhere. And we've been talking about the importance, the art, the
necessity.
Yeah, the necessity of apology.
Yeah. So we were saying on the little break that we just took that we feel that our parents should apologize to us, but they did the best job they could. And I feel like you just said, that you had to apologize to your mom. I find myself, and again, age is so helpful, you guys, to everybody out there listening. It does get easier. The highs and lows level out. You become more self-aware. I shared with you the story at my office. Jan, I never, in 10 years ago, I probably never would have done that.
You wouldn't have made the apology.
I wouldn't have even realized I'd done something wrong necessarily. I would have just said, "No, I'm just being decisive and I'm just
moving on." You wouldn't have
on.
Seen the little face
yeah,
going, I feel really bad.
Yeah. So it's, and with my mom's she's elderly, as you know. She's turning 88.
Oh, man.
In a couple of weeks. And I've been really thinking a lot about the conversations that I've had with her. We weren't close when I was younger at all. Like, we were just not really that close.
Yeah, I get
and,
it.
And as we got older, or as she got older, and as I probably got more mature myself, I decided that I could be mad at my mom forever. I could choose to say, she just wasn't, the kind of mom that she wasn't that, let me bake pies and cakes as a mom. Neither am I as a mom, like she wasn't that. And so I could blame her for not being what I thought was
the quintessential
yep. mother that was always there taking care of everything.
With an apron tied around her waist and
right.
flour on her cheeks.
Right. Or I can remember the fact that she had to work full time in order to put food on the table, and that we were barely getting by, and she came to a new country, and that she struggled so much with so many things. And you have choices you make with your parents, and I don't want to be that person that when my mom passes on, and I think she's not doing well right now, I don't want to be that person that looks back and says, I should have reconciled with her. I should have found a way to have a relationship with her. And it's been a struggle. It's been hard to find the the strength to just say, it just doesn't matter. That past doesn't matter. What matters is right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can't change my childhood, but I can certainly change my adulthood with her. And I can think about it differently. And I, because I travel so much, I don't get to see her the way you saw your mom living, you know, right
yeah,
with her.
No.
But I see her often enough, and I talk to her all the time. And, you know, I've just gotten more used to the conversations about the weather, and the weather becomes the number one thing. And
it was with mom too.
The weather,
wind,
the cold.
Yeah, the wind
and
the cold.
Always cold.
Mom
always
was too.
Cold. Always cold because they're frail. They don't have, you know, their circulation isn't great. They don't move around as much, and so they are cold. They literally are cold. And that and then the weather and then the next thing is, you know, the aches and pains, and then it's the conversations about their friends that are sick, and, you know, or like my mom just told me yesterday about a friend of hers that was in the retirement home that she's in who had a stroke, and, you know, they're surrounded by reminders of the shortness of their life, of how much runway is ahead of them.
Mm-hmm.
And as children, we can make a decision to make that journey a little bit better and happier, or we can continue to natter at them and be unhappy about the past. And it's a real choice that people have to make. I don't know. I feel like, I know I'm not saying anything earth-shattering here.
But Arlene, you are, because so many people live in this constant state of agitation
mm-hmm.
with their parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've said it time and time again, the necessity to be right, that being right trumps peacefulness.
Yes.
I did it for years.
Yeah, we all do.
I've written about it a lot, about having that epiphany, that quintessential moment in my life where my mom is, you know, going off about something, saying she's seeing people in the trees and seeing people at my house and seeing people working in the yard. And I'd argue and shut her down. And then one day I decided not to.
Yeah.
I'm like,
true.
Well, what are they doing, Mom?
Yeah.
Well, they're doing. They're standing in the trees and they're building something. Well, they're building a city. Really? What is it? What do you think? I wonder what that's costing them. Well, a fortune.
Mm-hmm.
And then we moved on.
Yeah.
Whereas before, I would have just, I don't know, I had steam coming out of my ears.
Well, because
I had cartoon steam coming out of my ears.
You know why you had steam? I mean, my theory on this is because we mourn and for what we've lost, right? We know that their minds are going. We know that they're not with us for much longer. And the anger is frustration. I mean, they say that anger only ever really is fear and frustration.
I agree.
It's, you know, you get angry because you're afraid of what's happening around you, and so you try and control it, and your anger comes up, or you're frustrated with something. And when you think about our parents aging and going through the things they go through, we're afraid for what we're about to lose, and we're frustrated that we can't fix it. And that shows itself up as anger. I think that's pretty common.
Has your mom been without a partner for a long time?
She is with, I think I told you this, she fell in love. She fell in love.
Folks, you got to listen to this.
So
88,
yeah.
Arlene's mom is in love, and he's 90, isn't he?
He's 90.
Oh, my God, there's hope for
me. He's turning 91, woo! Actually.
And so in 30 years.
Yeah. We're both going to find somebody. And, you know, and they're the cutest thing. They go to, my mom goes to the hair salon to get her hair done. I don't think they're having sex, but I actually don't want to know.
But what if they're doing Levi Lovin'?
Levi what?
Levi Lovin'.
What
That's
the
a Mormon
Levi
thing.
Lovin'?
You used to be Mormon.
I don't know what Levi Lovin' is.
You just rub through your pants.
Oh. I don't. This is my mother we're talking about. We're not going to have
listen,
that conversation.
They say women, especially like they hit 70 and you get more sexual. It's women.
You know, I'd like to just think about them as having companionship. Let's just talk about they share meals. But it's really funny. They both kind of shuffle along, and they mom goes to get her hair done when the weather is good, which is rare. When the weather is good enough for her, she goes outside. She goes to get her hair done, and they walk into the hair salon and they hold hands when they come in. And it's the same hair salon I go to here in Calgary called the Beverly, Bev Robertson, who's a fantastic hairdresser for those of you looking for one. And she says that everybody kind of stops, and mom walks in and she says, hello, hello. Say hello to everybody. And then they shuffle in and they hold hands. And then, you know, is Zoe here? Because Zoe does her hair. And they
we have so much to look forward to.
But, you know, what I love about it is they don't even realize the joy they're spreading by the fact that they're visibly
affectionate
to each other and supporting each other and, you know, worried about the steps they're taking. And
we're going to talk more about this.
Yeah, it's a very cool thing. So that's what's going on with my mom right now. And it's very interesting to watch. And it makes me, it puts a smile on my face. La, 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 la.
This is The Business of Life. I'm Jan Arden. I'm here in studio with Arlene Dickinson in Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
Yes, we are here together.
Still on the line of apologies. Have you had experiences apologizing with your mom, or has your mom apologized to you, like, for anything? Does she ever?
She has. Because
I know she gets a little contentious with you.
She has, and we haven't had any real contentious challenges for a while.
That's
now.
That's good.
A year ago, and we had she actually did apologize to me. She made some. She criticized me for something, and, you know, I mean, listen, I love my mother, but she
still
was
hurts.
She was a little bit critical of my personal appearance sometimes. You know, it was my hair was never right. And it was not just little things. You guys, little things. But, you know, we all know
but
that when our parents.
But it is the little things.
When our parents grab hold of kind of something that they. And she was also raised kind of with a mom that was also hypercritical. But she really did. She apologized to me. I think last summer I said, Mom, like, why do you need to go to, you know, my physical side of me. Like, let's just talk about something else about me that you are proud of. And she really stopped and she apologized and she said, I'm really sorry. I hadn't thought about it. And you're right. I tend to, and my mother did it to me, and I'm just carrying on the same thing. And it's hard because I find myself sometimes, like, I try so hard to be not critical of my children, like to be supportive of whatever they want to do and be. But it's hard as a mom to not find fault. Not fault in a way that says there's something wrong with you, but fault in a way that helps you think is going to make them better. But by doing that, you can actually really do harm. So you've got to be cautious of it. You've got to be thoughtful about it.
It's
like saying bad dog to Mitty all the time.
I mean,
could you imagine saying bad dog,
no.
bad dog? Eventually, she's going to start reacting to that. She's going to start feeling that she, you know, she's not going to be friendly and happy.
I don't think I've ever said that to her.
No, she's
she's not here. She's at
not
home.
Here?
No, I know. She's at home.
See, she's so little, she could be here and nobody would know.
Nadine's staying, my assistant is at my house, and she's just dealing, because I'm moving my parents' house right now. It's being cut into pieces.
Yeah, I saw
and it's an
that.
Arduous process. So they're cutting the garage off, and it's taken them like 3 days, but they've punched this huge, huge hole into the side of the house where the beam goes, and I just stand there and I'm like, what would my dad think of this? And it's so hard to not, I mean, obviously I don't, my parents, we never thought about what we were going to do with the house. We never spoke about it. We didn't plan for it. It was on my land, and, you know, I was talking to you the other day about this. We were texting back and forth, and I was saying that a house knows when it's not lived in.
Mm-hmm.
But, I know what you mean, like when parents admonish you for things, and it doesn't matter if you're 50 or 60 as a child, a parent can take you to a place that nobody else on the planet can, and a mother especially.
Yeah.
I was lucky with Mom, though. She was always so, so kind-hearted to me. It just was her nature. There is nothing wrong with your arms. You've got cute little arms. Why don't you wear a nice little T-shirt? The sun's out. Or she'd say, your freckles are cute. And I would just be like, oh, these freckles are just ruining my whole face here. But she just always... You'd look cute in a tube top. No, I don't think I'd look cute in a tube top. But that's her nature. My dad never said anything. It was just like I was an invisible child. That in and of itself is equally as terrible.
That's equally as harmful.
I just felt like he never saw me.
Yeah.
I could have been standing right in front of him waving my hands around. And he would have puffed away on his pipe and read his pocketbook.
Yeah. It's very... I mean, we... But isn't that kind of what life is all about, which is we go through these experiences with our families. Many of us, in fact, probably all of us come from some sort of a dysfunctional family where something has gone wrong at some point. And, you know, there's either relationship breakups, or there's anxiety, or there's fighting, or there's who knows, you know. I mean, if 50 or 60% of homes end up in divorce, then almost everybody has gone through some sort of challenge.
Or they know someone.
Or people who've stayed together and shouldn't and just fight their way
through
life.
The worst marriages don't end in a divorce.
Right.
They don't end.
They just don't end, yeah. So I think everybody's gone through that. The question is, what do you do with those life experiences? And I feel really fortunate to have made it to 62. Because I think at some point you kind of look at it and you can go, let's just talk for just a minute about that. I am so tired of age being a bad thing. Like women in particular, why do we want to hide how old we are? Like I'll stand on stage.
Because we've been admonished for it for so long.
It's like, what is wrong with age?
We're sent out to pasture. As soon as you're not deemed of childbearing age, you know, you're instantly marginalized. If you're not at your sexual, the top of your game, you're suddenly pushed
less
to the side
desirable.
Of the curb. So all those things that women are deemed useful for, you know, once we kind of come to the edge of that meadow, it's demoralizing, and it can be paralyzing. You know, most women our age, Arlene, are packing it in.
Yeah.
They're stopping, they're going on. Julia Child always inspired me so much because she started her cooking career at 50.
Yeah.
You know, I just read an article. I wish I knew this woman's name. She started writing novels at 75 and ended up writing 40 novels before she had passed away in her 90s.
Yeah.
She just thought, I'm going to be a writer.
Yeah.
So as we're sitting here, I just want to say to all the women out there, young, old, wherever you are in your life, it is never, ever too late to pick up a paintbrush or a camera or a piece of pottery or to start a business or to be entrepreneurial or to write poetry, whatever you want to do, take archery, shoot a gun. It's never too, I'm too old for that. I don't know where this came from, this way of thinking.
Well, it's because I think you nailed it with men. As they get older, they still, for the most part, they're still virile for the most part. They can still get some, you know, they still have sperm that count, apparently. They don't have as many of them, but they can still get a woman pregnant. If they can get it up. It's all about procreation. Sorry, everyone. We're not talking about something else.
We speak truths here.
We speak truths. But so men still have value as they age because they can still procreate. If you believe that we're, you know, that procreation is a fundamental thing that people are put on the planet to do. I'm not saying I do believe that.
I think
that.
On a biological level.
I think
level.
Biologically, that is. Anthropology would tell you that there's a chemistry that, and the reason that there's chemistry, the younger woman can get pregnant. Which is a whole
and
other
live longer,
conversation.
Yeah.
Because this whole, I mean, I don't know if we have time, but I am sorry, like everyone, and you may, like, we may end up losing two of our three listeners right here, right
Arlene.
Now. Because it is my body. I know I just took a big leap here talking about, you know, I'm going to go to this, but it is my choice. It is my body. It is my life. No man, no law, nobody can tell me what to do with my body.
No.
And
it would be like
so,
telling all men to get vasectomies. Listen, you can't put your
you
seed
can't get
there.
Pregnant.
You can't
pregnant.
Take a part of your body and put it in that woman and make her pregnant. So it's the messaging is so askew. It really is. I think if men were the guys that carried babies and got pregnant, none of these laws would exist.
Well,
these old white guys would never be imposing these kinds of things. And there's been this is such an old story. You know, the Roe versus Wade in the 70s, you know, all of us as women thought that these things had been put to bed. No pun intended. But they haven't been. All this stuff is being reopened, and they're being reopened in a ludicrous way. You know, the no exceptions for rape, no exceptions for incest, no exceptions for, you know, a 13, 12-year-old pregnant woman, pregnant girl, that are, you know, all that stuff.
I had this conversation with one
anyway,
of my family.
We're going to get letters.
I want to talk about this some more. Are we done? We're not done our show. We're just done the segment. So
we're going to come back.
We're going to come back because I want to talk about this because
You can get as mad as you want. My body, my choice.
I'm not even. I'm actually just so disappointed in what's going on in the world in general. But I am so disappointed that anybody thinks they have a right to tell anybody what to do with their bodies, their minds. Or
it's the darn Bible again. Arlene,
is it? Is it all religion?
I don't know. I think it's steeped in religious rhetoric. I think, you know, the soul and the excuses that they use. La, 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 la,
la, la. So welcome back, everybody, to the Business of Life. Jana and I have been talking about a few things, about apologies, about our relationships with our parents and the apologies that we...
And then we slipped into abortion.
And then we slipped into whose body and whose decision is it anyhow. So I had this conversation with my... We go all over the place. I don't know how we end up in the places.
Nobody talks about one thing for an hour,
no.
Do they?
Well, I don't know. If they do, that'd be pretty
interesting. No, it's just we go where we go.
I was talking to a family member about this very topic, and she's fairly religious, and my sister, and she, you know, she's really good. We have had some really interesting conversations, and I asked her the question. I said, you know, let's assume you were, you know, a 12-year-old girl, and you get, you know,
raped by a relative,
and or whatever, you know, just rape
guy
period.
Down the street.
And you're pregnant, and do you think should she have that baby? And so we had the conversation that went next into, well, she has her own views, and they are religious views, right? And listen, she has a right to her own views.
Yes,
that is my whole point.
But did she say that this child should have a...
She was very conflicted on that specific point, right? She said, you know, I see what you're saying. She says, but I can't reconcile against my belief that there's life.
It shouldn't be ended.
And so I think, you know, I said, listen, you have a right to what you think and believe. You can believe that, you know, the God you believe in wants to believe that she should have that child and raise it, and her whole life should be now changed and completely upset.
If a 12-year-old could live through that.
Right. So, and then, but then we went into, you know, your choice. And I said, Diane, Diane, my sister. I'm just like, I really love my sister. She has a right to her opinions. But that is the point. The whole point of this is you have a right to worship how you want.
And you do that with your body.
And do that with your
body.
Don't
push it onto me.
That's right.
It's individualized.
Everything's become individualistic. Everything's become about me, 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 and nothing. And yet, when it comes to our human rights, to our rights to control our own thoughts and bodies, then suddenly, no, the state and the church have a say in who we are and what we do. And I find it really, it's hypocritical in so many ways. You know, like, you can't tell people you have free agency, you have choice, you can do whatever you want. This is your life. And then say, but by the way, you can other than here. And I know people are going to get mad at us.
But it's okay. I think what's happened in the conversation is that these people that sit back and make these unilateral decisions about, you know, a fetus in a womb and when life begins and all these things. I think for me, what really gets lost here is that these straight white guys and a lot of women in government as well that are signing their names to these documents, you know, with all these rules, new rules about abortion. I think they're taking it like women think that this is a form of birth control. And I'll tell you what, every girlfriend I've ever talked to, any of my friends, that couldn't be further from the truth. None of us consider this a form of birth control. We know birth control, the diaphragm and the pill and the condoms and the spermicidal foams and the, you know, the IUDs and all these things that, you know, women have been responsible for since time immemorial. We're the ones that are supposed to be, you know, the goalies in front of the net, you know, stopping all this stuff. I think abortion, you know, most of the girlfriends that I know that have had abortions, and I know a lot of my girlfriends have had abortions, it's because they've had a tubal pregnancy, they've had an unsafe pregnancy, they are 48 years old and they have 4 children that are in college and just get pregnant by, some crazy mistake, you know, that decide as a family, they sit down with their sons and their daughters and have an abortion. I'm sorry, those are these, you know, for the most part, it's people making legitimately well thought out, horribly difficult decisions. A friend of mine, I won't even use, let's call her Connie, is so traumatized by an abortion she had at 17 years old that she almost has post-traumatic stress. Mm-hmm. It comes up every time we get together. You know, when she sees someone going down the street that could be like in their 30s now. And I just think, God, do these lawmakers really realize on the other side of this coin the personal stories, the anguish that women go through, and I'll tell you what, if illegal in Alabama, I think there's like 12 states now that have adopted these unbelievably irresponsible regulations when it comes to abortion. They're going to do it in an alleyway illegally. They're going to find it. They're going to seek it out. Young women are going to be drinking whatever that they can do on the internet, you know, how to end pregnancy. They're going to be doing whatever they need to do. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to stop whatever's going to happen. It's just going to endanger women's lives. So yeah. It's not an easy decision. That's what I mean. And these guys seem to think, oh, we just show up, we go into the clinic, we get an orange juice, put our feet in the saddle, and that's Bob's your uncle. That's not how this works, fellas.
It's not an easy decision, but it's also not anyone else's decision. And
no.
I think that's, and you know, this whole I actually have come really quite 180 degree on it because, you know, having grown up in a very religious church and environment, I was taught this was wrong, and I was told it was wrong, and that life, you know, like you but as I've become more aware of the challenges and the reasons and the things that could happen that could go wrong, you know, I've started to realize that it's not my place to judge, I don't know. It's a very complicated subject. It's not an easy subject.
What I know for sure is that
it should not be a dozen white 80-year-old men sitting in a room determining what should happen with a woman's body. That
no.
I know. I know that. I don't know much, but I know that you cannot take a group of men who have had zero responsibility, accountability, and give them authority to.
Now, 2 weeks ago, there was a couple of guys in the States, two government officials that had they both resigned because they had impregnated women. They'd come forward to say, and they wanted their lovers to have abortions. These are the people responsible that are signing their names to these bills
because they don't want to pay for it. It's them.
The hypocrisy.
Women don't get pregnant alone.
Women
do not get pregnant alone.
Mm-mm.
And so if men can go away and just, you know, la di da, and you know, make a woman pregnant and
have no responsibility.
Doctors and women that get abortions are going to have jail sentences where the guy who, let's say, he raped a woman, he will walk away with less of a jail term, if any, than the woman and the doctor who she
that
ends
he victimized.
Up, it's horrible. So
we got to think.
I think this is something that people should talk about, you know, go to our Twitter feed or, you know, send us notes, the business of life. Again, you don't need to agree with us. We all have a right to an opinion, and we don't blame you if you don't agree with us.
Be merciful. Be understanding. There's exceptions to all these things. And I'll just, you know, I'll summarize all this by saying these are agonizing decisions. Mm-hmm. They're not done frivolously. It affects the entire family when you have a young girl that's even pregnant by a boyfriend, even if we're dealing with 15, 16-year-old kids that, you know, are having sex for the first time and end up pregnant. And, you know, the whole family is upside down. And this upsets a woman's life for its entirety. It's not a light thing. So,
and it affects the child's life because, you know what, you may say, well, that child has a right to be born. You know, let's assuming that happened at a 16-year-old and, you know, they have sex, she gets pregnant, and then you say, well, that child should be born. That child being born into a family and a husband or a I guess a husband, a guy who doesn't want anything to do with the child, a mother who is traumatized and doesn't even know how to raise a child, isn't ready to raise a child.
Yeah, saying
what
to the lawmakers, to exactly. If you lawmakers are going to do this and you're going to impose this on women, you could do a full term pregnancy and you deliver this child, then you guys pay for it.
Yeah.
You guys
Who's
get child care, you help educate the woman that is now 17 or whatever that can't go to university. You pay for all this. You make sure that all this stuff is looked after. But nobody wants to step into taking any kind of responsibility for, you know, the aftermath of, okay, this kid's going to now carry this child to term, and no one's going to be responsible or help after the fact.
No.
So that's...
Who bears the shame when they go to, and it's such a horrible word to use, but these young girls going to, I remember girls that got pregnant in school.
Me too.
And had to, and they couldn't even go to school because everybody would shame them. Like it was just their fault.
We had
like,
three or four girls that missed a grade and then would come back in grade 11 and they'd go to some school in Edmonton and give their babies up for adoption. And, you know, I have nothing but respect and the bravery, the courage, the mental fortitude that it took for them to go away, it almost sounds like Ireland in 1945, you know, sending people away.
Yeah,
but
well, we all face our gods.
This was in the
70s. We all face our gods.
Yeah.
You know, no one's going to stand in front of who I believe in. I'm going to, and I'll have my own judgment. You know, like,
I hope that my God is made of chocolate.
I hope with ears that we can bite off. I like that idea. It's an Easter bunny. It's a bunny.
Whatever.
I hope my God. I hope my God is going to say, okay, I'm going to give you a pass on the first 45 years of your life, and then after that, I think we need to talk a little bit of, because by then you were old enough to know better. But up to then, I'd like a little bit of a pass because I just made some things. I did some things I'm
that
not
That is
happy
why
about.
We're here. We're here to make mistakes. We're here to atone. We're here to learn, and we're here to help each other out and cheer each other on, and certainly not judge each other. So if you're gonna throw that book around, by God, pick out the stuff that's actually pertinent to human life, and don't use it as a tool to admonish other people and to keep them down. And that's all the time we have.
They should put the Bible on a boomerang, so because when you throw those words out there, it should come back and hit you right in the head. All right. Well, talk to your friends, everybody, about just about everything.
Yes.
Because we do. And
I feel better for it.
Me too.
See you next time.
See you next week.
Love.